My soul is wrought to sing of forms transformed, to bodies new and strange. Immortal gods, inspire my heart, for ye have changed yourselves, and all things you have changed. O lead my song in smooth and measured strains, from olden days when earth began, to this completed time. Before the ocean and the earth appeared, before the skies had overspread them all, the face of nature in a vast expanse was naught but chaos, uniformly waste. It was a rude and undeveloped mass, that nothing made except a ponderous weight, and all the scorned elements confused, were there congested in a shapeless heap. As yet the sun afforded earth no light, nor did the moon renew her crescent horns. The earth was not yet suspended in the air, exactly balanced by her heavy weight. Not far along the margin of the shores had Amphitrite stretched her lengthened arms, for all the land was mixed with sea and air. The land was soft, the sea unfit to sail, the atmosphere opaque, to naught was given a proper form, in everything was strife, and all was mingled in a seething mass, with hot the cold parts strove, and wet with dry, and soft with hard, and weight with empty void. But God, O kindly nature, ended strife. He cut the land from skies, the sea from land, the heavens ethereal from material air. And when we're all evolved from that dark mass, he bound the fractious parts in tranquil peace. The fiery element of convex heaven leaped from the mass, devoid of dragging weight, and chose a summit arch to which the air as next in quality was next in place. The earth more dense attracted grosser parts, and moved by gravity sank underneath, and last of all the wide surrounding waves in deeper channels rolled around the globe. And when this god, which one is yet unknown, had carved asunder that discordant mass, and thus reduced it to its elements, that every part should equally combine, when time began he rounded at the earth and moulded it to form a mighty globe. Then poured he forth the deeps and gave command that they should billow in the rapid winds, that they should compass every shore of earth. He also added fountains, pools and lakes, and bound with shelving banks the slanting streams, which partly are absorbed and partly join the boundless ocean. Thus received amid the wide expanse of uncontrolled waves, they beat the shores instead of crooked banks. At his command the boundless plains extend, the valleys are depressed, the woods are clothed in green, the stony mountains rise, and as the heavens are intersected on the right by two broad zones, by two that cut the left, and by a fifth consumed with ardent heat, with such a number did the careful god mark off the compassed weight, and thus the earth received as many climes. Such heat consumes the middle zone, that none may dwell therein, and two extremes are covered with deep snow. And two are placed betwixt with hot and cold, which mixed together give a temperate clime. And over all the atmosphere suspends with weight proportion to the fiery sky, exactly as the weight of earth compares with weight of water. And he ordered mist to gather in the air and spread the clouds. He fixed the thunders that disturb our souls, and brought the lightning on destructive winds and also waft the cold. Nor did the great artificer permit these mighty winds to blow unbounded in the pathless skies, but each discordant brother fixed in space, although his power can scarce restrain their rage to rend the universe. At his command to far Aurora, Eurus took his way, to Nabath, Persia, and that mountain range first gilded by the dawn. And as if his flight was towards the evening star and peaceful shores, warm with the setting sun. And Boreas invaded Scythia and the northern snows, and Auster wafted to the distant south where clouds and rain encompass his abode. And over these he fixed the liquid sky, devoid of weight and free from earthly dross. And scarcely had he separated these and fixed their certain bounds, when all the stars, which long were pressed and hidden in the mass, began to gleam out from the plains of heaven, and traversed with the gods bright ether fields. And lest some part might be bereft of life, the gleaming waves were filled with twinkling fish, the earth was covered with wild animals, the agitated air was filled with birds. But one more perfect and more sanctified, a being capable of lofty thought, intelligent to rule, was wanting still man was created. Did the unknown god designing them a better world make man of seed divine? Or did Prometheus take the new soil of earth that still contained some godly element of heaven's life, and use it to create the race of man, first mingling it with water of new streams, so that this new creation, upright man, was made an image of commanding gods? On earth the brute creation bends its gaze, but man was given a lofty countenance, and was commanded to behold the skies, and with an upright face may view the stars. And so it was that shapeless clay put on the form of man, till then unknown to earth. First was the golden age, then rectitude spontaneous in the heart prevailed, and faith. Avengers were not seen, for laws unframed were all unknown and needless. Punishment and fear of penalties existed not. no harsh decrees were fixed on brazen blades, no suppliant multitude the countenance of justice feared, averting, for they dwelt without the judge in peace. Descended not the steeps, shorn from its height, the lofty pine, cleaving the trackless waves of alien shores, nor distant realms were known to wandering men. The towns were not entrenched for time of war. They had no brazen trumpets, straight, nor horns of curving brass, nor helmets, shields, nor swords. There was no thought of martial pomp, secure a happy multitude enjoyed repose. Then of her own accord the earth produced the store of every fruit. The harrow touched her not, nor did the plowshare wound her fields, and man content with given food, and none compelling, gathered arbute fruits, and wild strawberries on the mountain sides, and ripe blackberries clinging to the bush, and corners and sweet acorns on the ground, down fallen from the spreading tree of Jove. Eternal spring, soft breathing zephyrs, soothed and warmly cherished buds and blooms, produced without a seed. The valleys, though unploughed, gave many fruits. The fields, though not renewed, white glistening with the heavy bearded wheat, rivers flowed milk and nectar, and the trees, the very oak trees, then gave honey of themselves. When Saturn had been banished into night, and all the world was ruled by Jove supreme, the Silver Age, though not so good as gold, but still surpassing yellow brass, prevailed. Jove first reduced to years the primal spring, by him divided into periods four, unequal, summer, autumn, winter, spring, then glowed with tawny heat the parched air, or pendant icicles in winter froze, and man stopped crouching in crude caverns, while he built his homes of tree rods, bark entwined. Then were the cereals planted in long rows, and bullocks groaned beneath a heavy yoke. The third age followed, called the Age of Bronze, when cruel people were inclined to arms but not to impious crimes, and last of all the ruthless and hard Age of Iron prevailed, from which malignant vain great evil sprung, and modesty and faith and truth took flight, and in their stead deceits and snares and frauds and violence and wicked love of gain succeeded. Then the sailor spread his sails to winds unknown, and keels that long had stood on lofty mountains pierced uncharted waves. Surveyors anxious marked with meets and bounds the lands, created free as light and air, nor need the rich grounds furnish only crops, and give due nourishment by right required, they penetrated to the bowels of earth and dug up wealth, bad cause of all our ills, rich ores which long ago the earth had hid and deep removed the gloomy Stygian caves. And soon destructive iron and harmful gold were brought to light, and war which uses both came forth and shook with sanguinary grip his clashing arms. Rapacity broke forth, the guest was not protected from his host, the father-in-law from his own son-in-law. Even brothers seldom could abide in peace. The husband threatened to destroy his wife, and she her husband. Horrid stepdames mixed the deadly henbane. Eager sons inquired their father's ages. Piety was slain, and last of all the virgin deity, Astraea, vanished from the blood-stained earth. And lest ethereal heights should long remain less troubled than the earth, the throne of heaven was threatened by the giants, and they piled mountain on mountain to the lofty stars. But Jove, omnipotent, shot thunderbolts through Mount Olympus, and he overturned, from us a huge, enormous Pelion. And while these dreadful bodies lay overwhelmed in their tremendous bulk, so fame reports, the earth was reeking with the copious blood of her gigantic sons. And thus replete with moisture, she infused the steaming gore with life renewed, so that a monument of such ferocious stock should be retained. She made that offspring in the shape of man, but this new race alike despised the gods, and by the greed of savage slaughter proved a sanguinary birth. When, from his throne supreme, the son of Saturn viewed their deeds, he deeply groaned and called to his mind the loathsome feast Lycaon had prepared, a recent deed not common to report. His soul conceived great anger, worthy Jove, and he convened the council. No delay detained the chosen gods. When skies are clear, a path is well defined on high, which men, because so white, have named the Milky Way. It makes a passage for the deities, and leads the mansions of the thunder god to Jove's imperial home. On either side of its wide way, the noble gods are seen. Inferior gods in other parts abide, but there the potent and renowned of heaven have fixed their homes. It is a glorious place. Our most audacious verse might designate the palace of high heaven. When the gods were seated, therefore, in its marble halls, the king of all above the throng sat high, and leaning on his ivory scepter, thrice, and once again he shook his awful locks, wherewith he moved the earth and seas and stars, and thus indignantly began to speak. The time when serpent for the giant's throat to fix their 100 arms on captive heaven. Not more than this event would cause alarm for my dominion of the universe. Although it was a savage enemy, yet warred we with a single source derived of one. Now must I utterly destroy this mortal race, wherever Nereus roams around the world. Ye, by the infernal streams that glide through Stygian groves beneath the world, I swear it. Every method has been tried. The knife must cut immedicable wounds, lest melodies infect untainted parts. Beneath my sway are demigods and fauns, nymphs, rustic deities, sylvans of the hills, satyrs. All these, unworthy heaven's abode, we should at least permit to dwell on earth which we to them bequeathed. What think ye, gods? Is safety theirs when I, your sovereign lord, the thunderbolt controller, am ensnared by fierce Lycaon? Ardent in their wrath, the astonished gods demand revenge to overtake this miscreant, he who dared commit such crimes. 'Twas even thus when raged an impious band to blot the Roman name and sacred blood of Caesar, sudden apprehensive fears of ruin absolute astonished man, and all the world convulsed. Nor is the love thy people bear to thee, Augustus, less than these display to Jupiter, whose voice and gesture all the murmuring host restrained. And as indignant clamour ceased, suppressed by regnant majesty, Jove once again broke the deep silence with imperial words. Dismiss your cares, he paid the penalty, however all the crime and punishment now learned from this. An infamous report of this unholy age had reached my ears, and wishing it were false, I sloped my course from high Olympus, and although a god, disguised in human form I viewed the world. It would delay us to recount the crimes unnumbered, for reports were less than truth. I traversed Minalus, where fearful dens abound, over Lycaeus, wintry slopes of pine tree groves, across Kylenis steep, and as the twilight warned of night's approach, I stopped in that Arcadian tyrant's realms, and entered his inhospitable home. And when I showed his people that a god had come, the lowly prayed and worshipped me, but this Lycaon mocked their pious vows, and scoffing said, "A fair experiment will prove the truth if this be god or man," and he prepared to slay me in the night, to end my slumbers in the sleep of death. So made he marry with his impious proof, but not content with this, he cut the throat of a Molossian hostage sent to him, and partly softened his still quivering limbs in boiling water, partly roasted them on fires that burned beneath. And when this flesh was served to me on tables, I destroyed his dwelling and his worthless household gods, with thunderbolts avenging. Terror-struck, he took to flight, and on the silent plains is howling in his vain attempts to speak. He raves and rages, and his greedy jaws, desiring their accustomed slaughter, turn against the sheep, still eager for their blood. His vesture separates in shaggy hair, his arms are changed to legs, and as a wolf he has the same grey locks, the same hard face, the same bright eyes, the same ferocious look. Thus fell one house, but not one house alone deserved to perish. Over all the earth ferocious deeds prevail, all men conspire in evil. Let them therefore feel the weight of dreadful penalties so justly earned, for such hath my unchanging will ordained. With exclamations some approved the words of Jove and added fuel to his wrath, while others gave assent, but all deplored and questioned the estate of earth deprived of mortals. Who could offer frankincense upon the altars? Would he suffer earth to be despoiled by hungry beasts of prey? Such idle questions of the state of man the king of gods forbade, but granted soon to people earth with rays miraculous, unlike the first. And now his thunderbolts would Jove white scatter, but he feared the flames, unnumbered, sacred ether might ignite, and burn the axle of the universe. And he remembered in the scroll of fate, there is a time appointed when the sea and earth and heaven shall melt, and fire destroy the universe of mighty labour wrought. Such weapons by the skill of Cyclops forged, for different punishment he laid aside. For straightway he preferred to overwhelm the mortal race beneath deep waves and storms from every raining sky, and instantly he shut the north wind in Aeolian caves, and every other wind that might dispel the gathering clouds. He bade the south wind blow. The south wind flies abroad with dripping wings, concealing in the gloom his awful face. The drenching rain descends from his wet beard and hoary locks. Dark clouds are in his brows, and from his wings and garments drip the dews. His great hands press the overhanging clouds. Loudly the thunders roll, the torrents pour. Iris, the messenger of Juno, clad in many-coloured raiment, upward draws the steaming moisture to renew the clouds. The standing grain is beaten to the ground, the rustic crops are scattered in the mire, and he bewails the long year's fruitless toil. The wrath of Jove was not content with powers that emanate from heaven. He brought to aid his azure brother, lord of flowing waves, who called upon the rivers and the streams. And when they entered his impaled abode, Neptune, their ancient ruler, thus began. A long appeal is needed. Pour ye forth in rage of power. Open up your fountains, rush over obstacles. Let every stream pour forth in boundless floods. Thus he commands, and none dissenting, all the river gods return, and opening up their fountains, roll tumultuous to the deep unfruitful sea. And Neptune with his trident smote the earth, which trembling with unwonted throes, heaved up the sources of her waters bare, and through her open plains the rapid rivers rushed resistless, onward bearing the waving grain. The budding groves, the houses, sheep and men, and holy temples and their sacred urns, the mansions that remained, resisting vast and total ruin, deepening waves concealed and whelmed their tottering turrets in the flood and whirling gulf, and to now one vast expanse, the land and sea were mingled in the waste of endless waves, a sea without a shore. One desperate man seized on the nearest hill, another sitting in his curved boat, plied the long oar where he was wont to plough. Another sailed above his grain, above his hidden dwelling, and another hooked a fish that sported in a leafy elm. Perchance an anchor dropped in verdant fields, or curving keels were pushed through tangled vines, and where the gray-sal goat enjoyed the green, unsightly seals reposed. Beneath the waves were wandering nereids, viewing cities, groves and houses, dolphins darting mid the trees, meshed in the twisted branches, beat against the shaken oak trees. There the sheep, afraid, swim with the frightened wolf, the surging waves float tigers and lions. Availeth naught his lightning shock the wild boar, nor avails the stag's fleet-footed speed. The wandering bird, seeking umbrageous groves and hidden vales, with wearied pinion droops into the sea. The waves increasing surge above the hills, and rising waters dash on mountain tops, myriads by the waves are swept away. And those the waters spare, for lack of food, starvation slowly overcomes at last. A fruitful land and fair, but now submerged beneath a wilderness of rising waves, twixt Oita and Aonia, Phocis lies. Where thought the clouds Parnassus amidst twain point upward to the stars, unmeasured heights, save which the rolling billows covered all. There is a small and fragile boat, arrived, Deucalion in the concert of his couch, prepared to worship the Crician nymphs, the mountain deities, and Themis kind, who in that age revealed in oracles the voice of fate. As he no other lived so good and just, as she no other feared the gods. When Jupiter beheld the globe in ruined covert, swept with wasting waves, and when he saw one man of myriads left, one helpless woman left of myriads lone, both innocent and worshipping the gods, he scattered all the clouds, he blew away the great storms by the cold north wind. Once more the earth appeared to heaven and the skies appeared to earth. The fury of the main abated, for the ocean ruler laid his trident down and pacified the waves, and called on azure Triton. Triton arose above the waving seas, his shoulders mailed in purple shells. He bade the Triton blow in his sounding shell, the wandering streams and rivers to recall with signal known. A hollow-wreathed trumpet, tapering wide and slender-stemmed, the Triton took a mane and wound the pally shell at midmost sea. Betwixt the rising and the setting suns, the wildered notes resounded shore to shore, and as it touched his lips, wet with the brine beneath his dripping beard, sounded retreat. And all the waters of the land and sea obeyed, their fountains heard and ceased to flow, their waves subsided, hidden hills uprose, emerged the shores of ocean, channels filled with flowing streams, the soil appeared, the land increased its surface as the waves decreased. And after length of days, the trees put forth, with ooze on bending boughs, their naked tops. And all the wasted globe was now restored, but as he viewed the vast and silent world, Deucalion wept, and thus Epeira spoke, O sister, wife, alone of woman left, my kindred in descent and origin, dearest companion of my marriage bed, doubly endeared by deepening dangers born, of all the dawn and eve behold of earth, but you and I are left, for the deep sea has kept the rest, and what prevents the tide from overwhelming us, remaining clouds affright us, how could you endure your fears if you alone were rescued by this fate, and who would then console your bitter grief? Oh, be assured, if you were buried in the waves, that I would follow you and be with you. Oh, would that my father's art I might restore the people, and inspire this clay to take the form of man. Alas, the gods decreed, and only we are living. Thus Deucalion's plaint to Pyrrha, and they wept. And after he had spoken, they resolved to ask the aid of sacred oracles, and so they hastened to Cephissian waves, which roll the turbid flood in channels known. Thence, when their robes and brows were sprinkled well, they turned their footsteps to the goddess's fane. Its gables were befouled with reeking moss, and on its altars every fire was called. But when the twain had reached the temple steps, and they fell upon the earth, inspired with awe, and kissed the cold stone with their trembling lips, and said, "If righteous prayers appease the gods, and if the wrath of high celestial powers may thus be turned, declare, O Themis, whence and what the art may raise humanity. O gentle goddess, help the dying world." Moved by their supplications, she replied, "Depart from me and veil your brows, ungird your robes, and cast behind you as you go the bones of your great mother." Long they stood, in dumb amazement. Pyrrha, first of voice, refused the mandate, and with trembling lips implored the goddess to forgive. She feared to violate her mother's bones and vex her sacred spirit. Often pondered they the words involved in such obscurity, repeating oft, and thus Deucalion, to Epimetheus' daughter, uttered speech of soothing import. "Oracles are just and urge not evil deeds, or naught avails the skill of thought. Our mother is the earth, and I may judge the stones of earth are bones that we should cast behind us as we go." And although Pyrrha by his words was moved, she hesitated to comply, and both amazed doubted the purpose of the oracle, but seemed no harm to come of trial. They, descending from the temple, veiled their heads and loosed their robes, and threw some stones behind them. It is much beyond relief, were not receding ages witness, hard and rigid stones assumed a softer form, enlarging as their brittle nature changed to milder substance, till the shape of man appeared, imperfect, faintly outlined first, as marble statue chiselled in the rough. The soft moist parts were changed to softer flesh, the hard and brittle substance into bones, the veins retained their ancient name. And now the god supreme ordained that every stone Deucalion threw should take the form of man, and those by Pyrrha cast should woman's form assume. So we are hardy to endure, and prove by toil and deeds from what we sprung.